you, it's been a minute. Like 3 months almost, if not longer than 3 months. I'm so sorry it's taken so long to get to this episode. Life has happened this year, and let me just be honest, I don't like life. I don't like it here lately. It's not very kind. Nope, but you're not here for my problems. You're here for episode 3 of 4 in my Jack the Ripper series. I mean, maybe. I hope that's what you're here for. Otherwise, you know, maybe go back and listen to the first 2 episodes. But if you've hung out this long waiting on episode 3, thank you. Thank you so much for that love and dedication. I don't even know you, and you're just like, hey, this person's cool. I like her. Let's hang out. Let's hang out. I'm not opposed to that, especially since we don't have to hang out in person because I'm not a good people person. It's not who I am. But as I've already said, this is the 3rd part in my Jack the Ripper series. The last 2 episodes, Jessica was here with me as we discussed the victims, and this week we're going to be looking more at the letters/clues of the Ripper himself, which, let's be honest, we all live for the letters. We all like to play armchair detective and try to figure out who he was or is. I mean, I don't know. This could be a supernatural case. He could be undead. Who knows? That was a joke, okay? He's dead. Otherwise, we're all in trouble. But it was really important to do the first 2 episodes because, I mean, all of his victims were more than just victims. They were people, and they were more than sex workers. Everybody always focuses on them being sex workers and not on them being human people who had lives, and they were worth something. They were valuable because they were people. But welcome back. And if you're here for the first time, welcome to Crime and Theory, a podcast dedicated to everything outside the parameters of normal. I am your host, Ashley. And I'm sorry to say Jessica's not here. Life is chaotic. It gets in the way. I mean, she's a mom who has a job, and she is very busy. And I would love to have her back. But at the same time, I do need to keep the show running. And I'm sure she understands, because she's a loving, wonderful human being. But without further ado, buckle in, and let's get started. Basically, the sources for today are the first 3 pages of Google. Like, I deep dove into this. Dived. Whatever the word is. You know the word. You know the word. Okay? It's fine. So, let's recap. The Ripper murdered at least 5 women between the months of August and November of 1888. He has never been caught. I mean, obviously, he's not caught now. He's dead. But he was never caught then. Nobody has ever figured out who he actually was. He operated in the East End of London in the Whitechapel district, where immigrants from Russia and Jewish communities were establishing roots. The area was rife with crime. Not because of people being Jewish or Russian. I am not anti-Semitic, and I'm not anti-people. I'm saying people take advantage of those areas and take advantage of newcomers in order to... You get what I'm saying. I'm saying they were the victims, too. Now, during the time frame of these killings, letters allegedly written by the killer himself were sent to Scotland Yard taunting police, and he may or may not have also sent some to the press. Because what psychopath doesn't love a good pat on the back? Let's go ahead and establish that we should not take these letters as hard evidence, because it may very well have been a hoax. Each of the letters, some of the letters, is hard to say. But for one thing, a lot of the handwriting doesn't match up. However, for the sake of hopefully finding any clues, or if any of you want to read further into it and can glean something from it, we're going to read them today anyway. I mean, not all of them, mind you, because there's a lot. But we are going to read the most famous ones, and a few more for good measure. Now let's start with the Dear Boss letter. That's probably his most famous. It was received on September 27th, 1888, at the Central News Agency. And if you listened to the previous episode, Jessica made a note that there was one letter that might not be a hoax because of something mentioned in the letter that wound up being part of a crime scene soon after. And she was right. While this letter was first deemed a fake, it was reconsidered when part of Catherine Eddowes' ear wound up missing. This letter reads, "Dear Boss,
I keep on hearing the police have caught me, but they won't fix me just yet. I've laughed when they looked so clever and talk about being on the right track. That them till I do get buckled. Grand work, the last job was. I gave the lady no time to squeal. How can they catch me now? I love my work and want to start again. You will soon hear of me with my funny little games. I saved some of the proper red stuff in a ginger beer bottle over the last job to write with. But it went thick, like glue, and I can't use it. Red ink is fit enough, I hope. Ha ha. The next job I do, I shall clip the lady's ears off and send to the police officers, just for jolly, wouldn't you? Keep this letter back till I do a bit more work. Then give it out straight. My knife's so nice and sharp, I want to get to work right away if I get a chance. Good luck. Yours truly, Jack the Ripper. Don't mind me giving the trade name. P.S. Wasn't good enough to post this before I got all the red ink off my hands. Curse it, no luck yet. They say I'm a doctor now.
And that was creepy. Hoax or not, I mean, that letter was creepy. If it was a hoax, what kind of a psycho would write this kind of stuff and just ship it off to the news or the police? Like, it's all fun and games. They really needed TV back then. People were really bored. If this was a hoax, the people were so bored. Oh my goodness. The next one was received by the Central News Agency yet again on October 1st, 1888. The handwriting of this one is quite similar to the one that we just read, and the writer of the letter references his previous post and the murders of the night before. The people that believe the letter to be genuine use the fact that Catherine's ear was cut. However, her ear was not sent to police as promised. Now, I mean, that could have been his plan, and something could have hindered that plan. I mean, carrying around an ear out in public in broad daylight seems a little fishy to me, but maybe he was afraid that dogs would sniff it out. I don't know. I'm just playing devil's advocate on this. But believers also point out that this postcard mentions the double event with details that had not yet been released by the press. But those who believe this next letter to be a fake one point out that anyone could have possibly pulled the information from an early morning paper on October 1st and sent the postcard soon after. Or they could have just known a cop. Or a member of the press. People like to talk. But this one reads,
I was not codding dear old boss when I gave you the tip. You'll hear about Saucy Jackie's work tomorrow. Double event this time. Number one squealed a bit, couldn't finish straight off. Ha! Not the time to get ears for police. Thanks for keeping last letter back till I got to work again. Signed, Jack the Ripper.
I mean, he basically just says right there, because he was doing the double event, you know, things happened, he wasn't able to get the ear where it needed to be. Where it needed to be was on the person who should have been left alive, but that's just my humble little opinion here. And the next one is probably the other most famous letter, which is the letter from hell. I mentioned this letter in a previous episode. This is the one that came with half of a human kidney preserved in spirits. It was the letter in a 3-inch cardboard box, and this letter was sent to a George Lusk, who was president of the Whitechapel Vigilance Committee. He had received it in his mail. I mean, obviously, how else would he have gotten it? Now, here's the thing. I'm not sure how easy it was to just go and get someone's address back then, so perhaps this person maybe even knew George? Just throwing that out there. But medical reports written by Dr. Openshaw found that this kidney was very similar to the one removed from Catherine Eddowes. But that isn't conclusive, obviously. They didn't have DNA testing and whatnot back then. And while there were a couple of mistakes in the messages sent to Central News Agency, this one is riddled with poor spelling and punctuation. I mean, it's really bad. It's like someone obviously uneducated wrote this one, which goes against the theory that he may have been a very well-educated man, such as a doctor. Unless the writer did it on purpose to throw cops off the trail. It says,
from hell. Mr. Lusk, sir.
S-O-R, not sir.
I send you half the kidney.
No Y on kidney.
I took from one woman and preserved it.
Prasarved. Nothing against people who are illiterate. Nothing against people who are illiterate. At all. I'm just telling you how it's spelled. I mean, I guess if you really cared, you could look it up yourselves, but I'm just trying to give you the whole picture here. But it says,
I took from one woman and preserved it for you. T'other piece I fried and ate it was very nice. I may send you the bloody knife.
No E on knife. There have been a couple other misspellings in here as well.
That took it out if you only wait.
W-A-T-E.
A while.
No E at the end of while.
Longer. Signed, catch me when you can, Mr. Lusk.
And then on October 6th, 1888, the same day that Elizabeth Stride was being laid to rest, a letter was sent. It was either intended for Israel Schwartz or Joseph Lawand. Lawand? They were both believed to have seen the Ripper. This one is most likely a fake, and this one is also very poorly written, but again, I mean, it's worth a look. You never know. This one says, I think they meant thought, but they wrote though.
Yourself very clever, I reckon, when you informed the police. But you made a mistake if you thought I didn't see you. Now I known you know me, and I see your little game. And I mean to finish you and send your ears to your wife if you show this to the police, or help them if you do, I will finish you. It's no use your trying to get out of my way, because I have you when you don't expect it, and I keep my word, as you soon see, and rip you up. Yours truly, Jack the Ripper. P.S. You see I know your address.
Don't care for that one. I don't care for any of them, but no thank you. No thank you to any of these. Thank you. But no thank you. And then we have this one from October 29th, 1888. It was sent to Dr. Openshaw, the same man who investigated the half-kidney sent in spirits. And very few researchers give this one credit as being legit. But again, here we are. If nothing's gleaned from it, at least we're mildly entertained, right? Cue the clip from Gladiator where he's like, are you not entertained? I'll stop. This one reads,
old boss, you was right. It was the left kidney. I was going to operate again close to your hospital just as I was going to draw my knife along of her bloomin' throat. Them cusses of copper spoiled the game. But I guess I will be on the jobbin' soon and will send you another bit of innards. Jack the Ripper. Oh, have you seen the Seville with his microscope and scalpula? A-looking at a kidney with a slide cocked up?
Why were people so creepy? Why are people so creepy? Do you ever wonder that? Do you ever just look at people and think, why are you the way you are? I mean, this is obviously going to be a shorter episode because I'm not reading all of the letters and this is kind of like a filler. Until I can get back on track with getting the actual next episode, episode 4, the finale of the series, out. But, I mean, it's something else to hold on to. And if it's been a while since you've listened to the last two episodes, which it probably has been, go back and listen to those and see if you can piece anything together. But since we've reached the end of the letters, I want to talk just for a minute about what could have happened to the Ripper. There are pieces of fiction written about him that give us some wonderful forms of entertainment. The book Stalking Jack the Ripper by Carrie Maniscalco comes to mind. It's a very good book, but it's also not what really happened in a lot of ways. I mean, she even claims that she took creative liberties with the events. But there are some guesses about what happened that are good possibilities. For one, there are those who speculate that he may have fled to New York to continue his killings. According to BoweryBoyHistory.com, on April 24th, 1891, so not even 3 years after Mary Kelly's death, the body of a woman named Carrie Brown was found murdered in a lodging house in New York City. Carrie was a sex worker, that lines up, which seems to be the only connection to the other victims. I mean, it kind of lines up. There's no hard evidence that all five were sex workers, but it's fine. Carrie was known as Shakespeare. It was a nickname that she had gotten because she had the habit of quoting Shakespeare's works whenever given the chance. And while she was found stabbed and repeatedly slashed, she also had a cross cut into her thigh. And I feel like maybe this was some religious nut who didn't approve of her lifestyle. It doesn't quite line up with his method of killing. The Evening World posted the day after her murder, quote, "No crime which has been committed in this city for years has stirred the police department to such tremendous activity as the horrible butchery of Carrie Brown, alias Old Shakespeare, by Jack the Ripper or his double at the East River Hotel." End quote. I mean, truth be told, the media hasn't changed. What I mean is, people will say anything for a buck. So even though it's not likely that Jack the Ripper killed Carrie, the media probably took advantage of the even slightest of similarities in order to gain traction with their headlines. Police Chief Inspector Thomas F. Burns had insulted Scotland Yard because of their inability to catch the Ripper. And to save face, it's possible that was why he jumped in to make an immediate arrest in the Carrie Brown case. Now, the man arrested was an Algerian man named Amir Ben Ali. There was a severe lack of evidence in this case, mind you, but he was still convicted. This poor man served 11 years of his life before someone opened their eyes and spoke up, and only then was he exonerated. The year 1891 was also the same year that the Ripper may have started up again in London with his crimes, so I'm not quite sure what's going on here. Those 1891 victims weren't considered canonical, obviously, but there are 11 or so victims in all that may have been his work, and boy howdy, that's a lot. There are other speculations that the Ripper came to the States and he somehow also H.H. Holmes. I mean, I doubt it, but people have still made the connection. I highly doubt it. But if he didn't flee to the States, was he arrested? Did he die from a disease that ate away at his mind, which led him to kill? Was he murdered himself? Did he go somewhere else in the world besides America? I mean, we may never know. So now begs the question, why did he kill? Was it a poor upbringing that led to a messed up psyche? Did he have mommy issues? Was he impotent and took his anger out on those who made money from sex? I mean, what? There are a couple of interesting theories that I do have noted here. In the book, They All Love Jack, Busting the Ripper, author Bruce Robinson speculates that the killings were part of a conspiracy. A Freemason conspiracy, as a matter of fact. How very Assassin's Creed. But hear me out. He claims the anti-Semitic graffiti, the one with the word Jews spelled J-U-W-E-S, was ordered to be scrubbed from the wall, and not out of fear of retaliation from the Jewish community, rather than the killer was a Freemason, just like the police commissioner, Sir Charles Warren. Warren was the one who ordered it to be cleaned in the first place. And I know it doesn't really make any sense so far, but just stay with me. Remember the graffiti had the word Jews, again spelled J-U-W-E-S, which apparently refers to three men from a Masonic allegory named, please forgive me if I mispronounce this, Jubela, Jubelo, and Jubalum. They were collectively called the Jews, spelled that same way. These three murdered a man named Hiram Abiff. Robinson holds the belief that Michael Maybrick, who was a Freemason and the brother of James Maybrick, was Jack the Ripper, and the Masons went out of their way to help cover it up. I mean, it sounds bizarre, but I've heard weirder, and so have you, especially if you're into this kind of stuff. And then there's the theory that it was all just part of a big black magic ritual. A man named Robert Donston Stevenson was a journalist for Pall Mall Gazette. This guy was also super into researching the occult. He lived in London at the time of the killings, and he wrote a series of articles for the Gazette claiming that the killings were all part of a satanic ritual. This is like pre-D&D satanic panic here. He became so obsessed with the crimes that he started talking with private detectives and Scotland Yard about his theories. But this man hounded the police so much, and he presented such specific details about the crime scenes that it turned around to bite him in the butt because he wound up as a suspect. Some even believe that his Gazette articles were just veiled confessions. hi, how are you? It's been a minute. Like 3 months almost, if not longer than 3 months. I'm so sorry it's taken so long to get to this episode. Life has happened this year, and let me just be honest, I don't like life. I don't like it here lately. It's not very kind. Nope, but you're not here for my problems. You're here for episode 3 of 4 in my Jack the Ripper series. I mean, maybe. I hope that's what you're here for. Otherwise, you know, maybe go back and listen to the first 2 episodes. But if you've hung out this long waiting on episode 3, thank you. Thank you so much for that love and dedication. I don't even know you, and you're just like, hey, this person's cool. I like her. Let's hang out. Let's hang out. I'm not opposed to that, especially since we don't have to hang out in person because I'm not a good people person. It's not who I am. But as I've already said, this is the 3rd part in my Jack the Ripper series. The last 2 episodes, Jessica was here with me as we discussed the victims, and this week we're going to be looking more at the letters/clues of the Ripper himself, which, let's be honest, we all live for the letters. We all like to play armchair detective and try to figure out who he was or is. I mean, I don't know. This could be a supernatural case. He could be undead. Who knows? That was a joke, okay? He's dead. Otherwise, we're all in trouble. But it was really important to do the first 2 episodes because, I mean, all of his victims were more than just victims. They were people, and they were more than sex workers. Everybody always focuses on them being sex workers and not on them being human people who had lives, and they were worth something. They were valuable because they were people. But welcome back. And if you're here for the first time, welcome to Crime and Theory, a podcast dedicated to everything outside the parameters of normal. I am your host, Ashley. And I'm sorry to say Jessica's not here. Life is chaotic. It gets in the way. I mean, she's a mom who has a job, and she is very busy. And I would love to have her back. But at the same time, I do need to keep the show running. And I'm sure she understands, because she's a loving, wonderful human being. But without further ado, buckle in, and let's get started.